painting to photography, from beadwork to woodwork. KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University presents Artbeat. Artbeat highlights the work and accomplishments of local artists from in and around Winona. Support for Artbeat is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Now, here's Terry Tenseth with today's Artbeat.
On this episode of Artbeat, we learn about the music theater production of I Am Anne Frank, being presented by Nautilus Music Theater Company out of St. Paul. This partially legacy-funded production portrays the character of Anne in an inspiring way that you have never seen before. Learn how you can catch the performances at Winona State University this week and find out what goes into a production like this and more. You're listening to Artbeat, and today we're talking with the director of I Am Anne Frank from Nautilus up in the Twin Cities, and he will be in town with the production Thursday the 3rd, Friday the 4th, Saturday the 5th, and Sunday the 6th to present this musical, which features a Winona native, Vanessa Gamble, also known as Muris. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm Ben Krywaz, Artistic Director of Nautilus Music Theater.
And you were here last year with Joan of Arc, and that was a musical as well, and that went over really well.
Very well received down here. It was great to bring it to the audiences down here. And actually, we tend to think of this work as music theater rather than musicals. People tend to, when they hear musicals, they think it's all singing, dancing, comedy, you know, something light and frothy. And the work that we do has a little more substance to it. Certainly, there's light moments and an enjoyable experience, but it's an opportunity to use music to tell stories. And sometimes the stories that we tell are perhaps a little more serious and more thought-provoking than most people think of musicals.
Opera kind of treads that line as well, though, but this is different than that.
Well, the work that we do is very, very accessible. In many people's minds, opera tends to be very serious, very dour, very kind of dark, and sometimes boring. Sometimes it's in a foreign language, or is sung in a style that is really an acquired taste vocally. And the work that we do is, I think, more vernacular in its music and more accessible. But obviously, what we do is in English, because that's the language that the composer and the writer are writing in, and they know the audience speaks English. And so it's important that the words are heard and are understood. And so that's one of the things that sets this off from being an opera.
Traditionally, you don't think of Anne Frank as something that would be set to music. So what kind of input do you have on that?
Well, a number of people have come to the show and they've told us afterwards, gee, I came wondering if it was possible to tell the story through music. And even the writer herself admits that when she was working on it, people would assume it would be like Springtime for Hitler would be their response. And again, if you think of it as a musical, certainly that question gets raised. But when you think about telling their story through music, it becomes a music drama, a music theater piece. And the music just serves to illuminate the emotional life of this character in a very poignant and wonderful way. And of course, the performances are really the things that bring it to life. The singing, the acting, and the movement make it very clear, as people say afterwards, well, of course, this is the perfect way to tell this story.
With this particular production, I Am Anne Frank, can you kind of clue us in on what to expect?
Well, everybody thinks that they know the story of Anne Frank and that so many of us read it while we were in high school, or it's still taught, of course. And this piece takes a little bit of a different approach than telling the story in a conventional linear narrative sort of way. It actually begins with the two performers, Vanessa Muris Gamble, as you mentioned, and Joel Lissman. And they come out on stage, they introduce themselves as the performers, and they kind of enumerate a couple of more contemporary instances of intolerance that have happened around the world in the last few decades. And then they move into the story of Anne Frank, and at some point then they become the characters in the story. The basic structure is that there'll be excerpts from the diary that are spoken by Vanessa, and then songs that are written by Enid Fruderman and Michael Cohen. And together, they weave together this kind of collage and a less linear, more poetic look at her life, not just as an icon of the Holocaust and all of that we associate with that horrible situation, but also about her as a young woman moving from adolescence into womanhood and discovering parts of herself and the fact that she wants to be a writer, and that's one of the major discoveries that she makes. And at the end of the piece, she says, as long as I write, I know I'm alive. So we really kind of get a sense of her as an artist, as a writer, as a creative soul, which makes the loss of her even more poignant.
Let's talk about different things that went into this production. Set design. Let's hit on that first.
Well, it's a very simple set design. Our aesthetic is that we prefer to focus on the performer as the primary communicator of meaning in the music theater experience. And so we train the performers to really display the kind of emotional intensity that is important to the telling of the story. Overall, we will often say that we prefer emotional realism over theatrical naturalism. And what that means is that the emotional intensity of the character is much more important than trying to fool the audience into thinking that the performer has become the character. So we will create, as you mentioned, the set design, that we're creating a space in which the story is being told rather than a space in which the story is happening. So in this particular instance, we have a single platform that is a very small, almost claustrophobic in its size. We have a desk and a stool, the necessary requirements for a writer sitting down and writing her diary. We have a window frame where she can look out and see the world that is forbidden from her, that she can't actually enter this world around her. And that's basically it. The back wall is actually a page from her diary. It's actually the writing on the wall. And in no way does it represent the attic, but it also evokes the attic, and it evokes her room. But it really is the place in which the story is being told.
So people are better able to suspend their disbelief and fall into the story by concentrating more on what's happening to the character.
Yeah, well, almost what's happening to the performer, you know, instead of the character per se. We are there to tell a story, and we are the ones telling the story. And if in the course of telling the story, we have to pretend to be the character for a moment, we can certainly do that.
Right.
So in that sense, it makes no effort to, say, fool the audience into thinking they're really in the attic. Both performers are in their late 30s. They're certainly not the 15-year-olds that we would expect to be in the situation. If we were making a movie, which is so wonderful at naturalistically conveying things, we would want somebody that would look like the character. And in this instance, these are two people who are telling you the story of Anne Frank. And there are times where they evoke the characters, but they don't actually ever become the characters.
Going back kind of to set and planning, I'm guessing that the light, like the set, is pretty minimal as well, just evokes daylight or the light she would imagine herself in.
Yeah, I would say actually with a minimalist set like this, the lighting becomes even more important. There's a lot of thought that goes into the various lighting cues, and that sort of help tells the story emotionally. So there's certainly moments of darkness. There's times where night comes in. She sings about night. At one point, we hear the recorded sound of her father singing her a lullaby to put her to sleep. There's light that comes in from the window that she's not able to go outside, but the light does come in. At one point, we use stars where she imagines what it would be like to go outside, and she looks out the window at the night sky and sees all these stars and thinks about what it would be like to run through the rain and enter the real world again. And other theatrical effects as she goes into, there's some movement sequences that are sort of thinking about some of the Jewish religious rituals and so forth, and light's used in a very stylized way. Again, it's not very naturalistic, but it's certainly used in a way to literally color the show in a way that is consistent with the emotional experiences of the character.
And something I'm noticing from looking at a couple of stills that you've given me, Ben has given me some pictures of the set and of Vanessa on stage, and I'm noticing that her dress is actually a very, what I think is a very vibrant maroon or plum color set against a very natural toned background. Was that specifically chosen?
Yeah, actually the dress is a real vintage dress. Vanessa and I went shopping for that, and we did find it, and we've used it ever since. And the color scheme is intended to be somewhat muted. There's a little bit of life in that costume, in that wonderful shade of maroon, because she was a very lively person, and there was a lot of energy in her. And that becomes really evident in the performance, too.
With the music, in regards to that, you had mentioned before we started the interview that there's one piano, and that's it?
Yeah, just a single piano. Michael Cohen, the composer, and Ingrid Fruderman, both of them are Jewish. Michael has used a number of Jewish colored melodies, but he also orchestrated the piece. The full musical is fully orchestrated. He also did a chamber song cycle that was also orchestrated. But the piano seems to be the right choice for this particular production, given the sparseness of the set, certainly the the solitude of the single performer on stage for most of the show, and just the sense that this is a very small and lonely situation, that the piano colors really nicely.
Let's talk about the care that went into actually casting this. How did you find Vanessa?
Well, I've worked with Vanessa for a number of years, I think since 1995. And I first discovered this piece. Actually, it was originally written as a full-scale musical. And I happened to see that about 25 years ago. It's a piece called Yours, Anne. And sometime after that, the composer and the writer extracted some songs from the show and put together a kind of this one-woman version for another singer. And I stumbled upon that doing research on another project about 7 or 8 years ago. And I thought, well, this could be interesting. Maybe that's something I should look at. So I got some material on it and listened to the recording, and I thought, this would be perfect for Vanessa. And I gave her a copy of the recording, and instantly she said, oh, yes, I think I can do this. And so we did a reading of the piece in 2005, and the writer who had given permission for us to do it came out and saw it, and she fell in love with Vanessa and said, oh, my gosh, she's perfect. And so we were given permission to do a fully staged production in 2006 at Intermedia Arts in Minneapolis. And got an Ivy Award for that. It was very, very well received. And we've been wanting to take it on tour ever since. And just 2 years ago, we got enough financial resources through the Legacy Amendment to be able to take it out and around. And we've performed it a number of times now around the state.
So the Legacy Amendment helped you be able to put on this performance. Can you talk about how important that Legacy Fund is?
Well, as I say, we've been wanting to tour this and some of our other shows, but we just can't afford it. It's a very expensive proposition, and many places in outstate Minnesota can't afford to pay for the whole costs. So once the Legacy Amendment was passed and the State Arts Board received additional funds, they initiated a touring program. And so once we got the grant, that allowed us to plan accordingly and to be able to take this piece out. And the State Arts Board is paying for 80% of the costs. So it's a really wonderful opportunity for us to take the work out and for these communities around the state to access the kind of work that they normally would not be able to see.
What are the challenges in directing a show like this for you, and then the challenges for the actor?
Well, directorially, it's a matter of trying to create the right physical environment for the story to be told. And then in terms of staging, it's not a conventional linear narrative. And so therefore, it requires me to think more poetically and more metaphorically about how we're going to use movement and stage action. It's not a function of these people having conversations or people coming and going, and you set it up as if they're in a room and becomes naturalistic in that sense. It's much more about the single performer on stage. How are you going to keep the space alive while she tells the story? And as far as the performer goes, of course, Vanessa will give you, you know, her answer on that. But it means that she's on the stage throughout the whole piece. She never leaves the stage. She's constantly either speaking or singing. The other character that Joel plays is off to the side and serves as a witness at times and occasionally will enter into the piece as a performer. But for the most part, Vanessa carries the show. And so it's, you know, basically an hour and 5 minutes of nonstop memorization and emoting and being able to, as I say, tell the story in a way that's emotionally authentic.
I would think for a character like Anne Frank, you would almost have personal struggles dealing with the different things that happen in Anne Frank's life, that it might be hard to internalize, or it would be something that would be stuck in your mind constantly, and then trying to pop out of that and get back to normal life would be difficult.
Well, again, Vanessa can address that. I know she has strong feelings about the piece and about the need and the value of doing a piece like this. Certainly, it's in rehearsal over the course of the various times that we've prepared the piece. We're reminded of the enormity of the situation. And certainly we can, you know, as people will do, lighten it up a little bit and make a few jokes here and there. But the reality is pretty strong. And we're reminded, just the other day, we were in rehearsal and after we run through of a couple scenes, had a little conversation about, oh yeah, this is a powerful piece, and what happened is needs not to happen again, and we need to tell the story in order to make that point. I recently was in Washington, D.C., and visited the Holocaust Museum. It's a very sobering experience, and we think we know this story, and we think we are aware of the issues at hand, but when you start to see evidence again or start to be affected emotionally by the trials and tribulations of all that these people went through, it does give a very different perspective. It is difficult to sort of let go of that and go back into, quote, real life.
I think people think of the Holocaust and they think, oh, that was a long time ago, when in fact it really, if you look at the scope of history, it's not. So to be reminded of what has happened and to put in the forefront of your mind that things of this nature should never happen again are important to society, to have that constant reminder.
Well, that's one of the wonderful things about this particular production, is that it opens with a litany of more recent happenings, the Matthew Shepard story and some of the attacks on Muslims that happened after 9/11 and some of the racial strife that we've had in our country. To enumerate those events and lay them out in a way that reminds people that, oh, this does continue to happen, even though we say never again, it still continues to happen. And then focusing in on Anne's story, we can see what happens when those kinds of incidences grow to a point of horror.
So if people want to come to the performances, they can get the tickets through Winona State University.
Actually, the best way to get tickets would be through Brown Paper Tickets. And they can just do ann.brownpapertickets.com, and that'll take them directly to the website that allows them to buy tickets. Certainly, tickets will be available at the door, too. But if you want to be insured of getting tickets, you should buy them online. I should also mention, too, that after each performance, we're going to have a talk back with the audience. We have found that people seem to kind of want to process a little bit and to talk with us about their experience of watching this piece, and to talk with the actors and get a sense of what their process was in order to tell the story. And we're certainly interested in hearing from people their reactions to the story and to allow them just to articulate a little bit about what they're feeling. So we usually spend about 20 minutes or so talking with the audience.
Well, and I'm sure for you as a director and for the actors, you are always constantly learning and then taking that into your mind as to how that can be applied the next time.
Yeah, I would say that since we've done this in 2006, and we've performed it in, I think, four other places now, every time it's gotten better, it's gotten deeper. We're all a little older. The world has changed somewhat. We're all even more aware of some of the things that have been happening over the last decade. So I think there's a richness to coming back and revisiting this material time and time again.
What other projects have you got lined up?
After we leave Winona, we come back to the Twin Cities, and we're going to do a weekend of performances of Anne Frank at the Southern Theater. In January and February, I'm working on a project at the University of Minnesota, a music theater movement staging of Jethro Tull's Thick as a Brick, which is on the opposite end of the aesthetic spectrum than I Am Anne Frank, working with choreographer Penelope Free and composer Robert Elhai. Then I'm doing a Composer Library Studio in New York, and then we have, hopefully we'll be taking out a couple of our pieces on tour in March, April, May, June.
You're busy.
Yes, yeah, we definitely keep busy.
Now, if people want to know more about Nautilus, where can they go?
Well, we have a website, www.nautilusmusictheater.org, and that's theater spelled with an E-R. Or they can call 651-298-9913. We also have a Facebook page, although it's not updated as regularly as I should. It's hard to keep up on those sorts of things. Then also they can just email me, ben@nautilusmusictheater.org.
Well, thanks for taking time out.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm glad to be down here.
A big thank you goes out to Ben Krywas for visiting with us about I Am Anne Frank. More information on the production and Nautilus Music Theater can be found at www.nautilus, that's NAUTILUS, music theater with an ER.org. You've been listening to ArtBeat.
ArtBeat is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. Visit us on the web at kqal.org.